A number of major newspapers have folded in recent years. Meanwhile, community journalism sites have sprung up from Seattle to Springfield. Media gurus declared hyper-localism to be the future of journalism and a good living for out-of-work reporters. A few big-ticket news outfits took that bet, including AOL, which launched Patch.com in 2010. A few years on, hyper-local sites take many forms with differing degrees of success. AOL lost $147 million on Patch in 2011. Turns out that news on town hall meetings, police blotter reports, and high school sports may not be as bankable as once thought. Janet Stilson is freelance writer, blogger, and contributor to Adweek. Janet, great to have you with us.
Thank you.
News and hyperlocal news was once the great promise of the future. Is that still true?
I think that it's one tool in the toolbox for news organizations. This is a period, I believe, of both adjustment as well as expansion for hyperlocal news sites. They've only been around for, as far as I'm able to tell, about 4 years now. So if the whole phenomenon is still fairly immature.
Well, anecdotally, I'd say everyone likes to know what's going on in their town, but I'm looking at the quality of some of these, scanning them. Content varies, a fair bit of reprinted press releases. What are some successful examples of hyperlocal news sites?
Well, one that I came to like a great deal is called InsideBainbridge.com. It's produced by two women on Bainbridge Island, which is off the coast of Seattle. And some of their stories are very, very local. New traffic lights going up downtown can be a top news item, or somebody almost crashing into the store of a building. But on the other hand, some of their stories have been picked up by Reuters and by the Chicago Tribune. So in terms of exactly how small their story is, it can sometimes vary. I mean, I spoke with one advertiser who advertises on Inside Bainbridge, and it's a store called Wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first month that they advertised on the site, their sales grew by 15%, and they say that that was directly related to those advertisements. So while the site is still trying to become profitable, it is proving a success in other ways.
Mm. Well, you mentioned two women. It's not a huge news organization. How are those women supporting themselves financially? Through ads like that from Wilderness?
Yes, I believe that that's the way.
Well, what's the incentive, let's say, for an independent hyperlocal news outlet or blogger to partner with bigger publishers? I mean, we've seen that model with AOL. The New York Times had some local sites, the Chicago Tribune. What's the benefit for them?
Well, I think that if you have a really small site, a neighborhood site, if you're able to team up with a large, a company like the Seattle Times, for example, which picks up Inside Bainbridge.
Mm-hmm.
Inside Bainbridge, the Seattle Times has on its site links to about 50, I believe it's about 50 hyperlocal news sites, which are produced all over the Seattle area. And what those sites benefit from is, first of all, they expand their usage, mm-hmm. because more people become aware that they exist. And secondly, that's a benefit to their advertisers, because the advertisers get more reach as well.
That can be a problematic relationship, however, because last summer, the case of Journatic, this is a company which partnered with companies like the Chicago Tribune, was found to have fabricated stories, plagiarized bylines that they actually outsourced to writers in the Philippines. Now, this is a big risk for reputable news outlets to rely on these, startups, digital producers, maybe bloggers part-time. How are successful news outlets managing this relationship with the hyperlocal sources?
When I did my reporting for the story for Adweek, I never asked that question specifically. I was more focused in the story on the financial model.
Mm-hmm.
But I can tell you from the other reporting that I've done on media companies that good media companies have great lawyers that they rely on to make sure that there are disclaimers on their sites to distance themselves from contributors who, there, you know,
who may not be as responsible as they are, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you have, for example, the Arizona Republic has a site called AZ Central, which actually is for the entire state of Arizona, and it has lots and lots of independent bloggers that it publishes their sites. It only has one person on staff, which it refers to as a curator, who's managing, basically is serving as air traffic control. So the only way I can conceive of it as a journalist is you'd have to have those disclaimers, because how can you possibly, you know, fact check and go over every story in detail with all these different people?
We're talking with Janet Stilson of Adweek about the future of hyperlocal news sites. She's especially been looking at the financial model and some of the epic failures, actually, of teams of high-ranking publishers with hyperlocal news sites. In fact, Janet, we mentioned AOL. They took a bite out of a bit of a bath, let's say, on Patch.com, which employs journalists in this area, I will also note. So what do you think? What is the future? You said maybe we're just in a growing period. Are readers going to find enough value and sink enough dollars into these small hyperlocal sites to keep them going?
Well, let me just first back up and talk to you a little bit more about what's going on with Patch, because the story is actually there's been some more information that's surfaced since those losses were reported, which were specific to 2011. In 2012, Patch cut its expenses by 30%. And it largely did so not by cutting out reporters that were, you know, boots on the ground going out and getting the local news stories, but sort of mid-layer of editors. And they now are expecting to become profitable by the end of this year. Mm-hmm. They have, across the entire U.S., they have 900 local sites. And that's expanded from about 800, I want to say maybe a year ago. So they're continuing to expand. About 100 of those sites are currently profitable. So I think that, you know, to my earlier point, it's a period of retrenchment. People are trying to figure it out. And some have failed. It's true, absolutely. But others are figuring out different business models. Patch now uses information from more bloggers than it ever did. So it has a combination of both professional journalists as well as bloggers that it offers up in there. And so they have a wider variety of content than they used to have. And then on the sales side, things are also, there's a lot of experimentation going on. There are companies that blog sites can rely upon who will take the burden of selling advertising off their shoulders. They essentially are, you know, telesales operations, and which are really about the only way that you can do this if you're doing it on a large scale, the way that some operations are doing it, where they have, you know, many, many different sites, and the ads that they're selling are not for very much money. It could be $200 a month. So that's one way to cut your cost.
Well, we'll watch this space then. Janet Stilson, freelance writer, blogger, and contributor to Adweek, I want to thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Coming up, we discover our weird America. A new travel show finds the fringes of the nation's recreational habits. That's when word of mouth continues.